At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Songwriter Connection, the podcast that delves deep into the art and heart of songwriting. Each week, we gather around the dining room table to uncover the stories behind the songs. We invite you to join us on a journey to the creative minds of the songwriters who shape the melodies of our lives. From Nashville, Tennessee, here's your host, Dave Lenihan.
So many podcasts out there today. I want to thank you for finding ours and listening, especially if you've got an interest in songwriting, becoming a better songwriter. That's what we're all about on the Songwriter Connection. And today, we've got a very successful hit songwriter with us, and it's just a pleasure to have Marty Dodson here. Hi, Marty.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I want to talk a little bit about what you've accomplished. You've got six number one singles. Six. Wow. And countless cuts. I'm just going to name some of these artists here. Carrie Underwood, Blake Shelton, Joe Cocker, Leon Russell, Oak Ridge Boys, Kenny Chesney's big hit, Billy Currington. We'll talk about that song, too. And so many others, and in crossing the genres too. We don't like to talk about genres, but you had a K-pop hit, and you've had hits songs with people like Plain White Tees and Saving Jane and others. So you've done a lot, but it extends your success extends beyond the songwriting. You've got a couple of books out there on songwriting that you've written with our good friend Bill O'Hanlon, who's been on the show a couple of times. You have got a podcast. You have got Songtown. Mm-hmm. That you and Clay Mills started out, and so you're a mentor as well. Yeah. So it's good to have you here.
Thank you.
We're going to pick your brain a little bit.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. I want to start with a video I saw earlier this week. I think it was a Songtown video that you did, talking about success and clearly defined goals. And many times on the show I have said, you've got to define your own success, you know, or you've got, and in order to do that, what I've left out is you've got to have really clear define goals. And I loved how you broke it down. You said, well, maybe you're a writer that just wants to do it as a hobby and wants to be a better songwriter. Or maybe you're one that just wants that one big hit, right? Or maybe you want to make a living at this. And no matter what those goals are, there are ways to attain that, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think the tendency we have is to compare our journey with other people.
Oh,
you know?
Man, it happens.
And, early in my career, I wrote with Ashley Gorley, who now has 75-ish number ones.
Number ones, yeah.
You know, and we hit it off personally, but we just didn't write something great. And, you know, we wound up not writing again. And
people, sometimes that happens.
Yeah, and people say, well, don't you regret not staying in there? And I'm like, no. I mean, I think my path has been my path, and
yeah,
that's okay. And I'm
excited.
And you
were thankful for the experience,
yeah.
Right? And you didn't get out of there without learning something, right?
Exactly.
I learn with every co-write. I don't care who I'm writing with.
And so, you know, I think it's one thing I've learned. It's just we have to really define who we are and what we want, and then work out a plan to get that, you know, and not compare ourselves to everybody else and what's going on. When I started, I had three children, and I was only able to write part-time. I was having to work some part-time jobs, and so I was looking at the people in our office that were writing three songs a day, and I'm writing three songs a week, you know? And yeah. So it was a killer of my creativity for a while to really get down on myself and say, you know, I'm not keeping up with even the guys in our office.
You know, and it's easy to do that today, especially with the social media the way it is. Everybody's posting, wrote four songs today. Look at what I'm doing today. And it's just so hard. And as soon as that thought enters my mind, I go, no, stop. Mm-hmm. You can't compare yourself. Be happy for them, you know. But don't compare yourself, because you put in, you put yourself in a rut, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So if you want that big number one hit, you said, well, are you listening to radio every day? Do you know what these songs sound like? Do you have those kind of jobs?
Yeah.
And if you want to make a living at it, what? Come to Nashville or no? Yeah. You know, you're lucky. You grew up here, right?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in some ways, that was a blessing. Some ways, it was a curse. You know, because I didn't try to become a songwriter at first, because everybody working on our air conditioner was trying to be in the music business, and the waiters and waitresses. And
here in Nashville, you'll find that.
Yeah. So I didn't have any connection at all, and so I was super intimidated by it, and so I just went to college and got a degree. And
so you went to Lipscomb, and I remember hearing your story. You're saying just for the heck of it, you took a songwriting class. So you must have had an interest, right? And the guy teaching it was a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Everybody running here in Nashville is a songwriter, so plumbers, whatever, is whatever, you know. But what made you now? So you took a really cool path. You've tried something else, and what made you interesting? Where'd you first have that interest in songwriting?
Well, when I was 11, my parents bought me a guitar.
Okay.
And I grew up with a dad who was a drug addict. And so I would sit in our basement and play my guitar and write songs about, you know, just getting my feelings out, I guess, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it was always something writing was something I was always interested in. When I was in sixth grade, our school had a writing contest, and I forgot to do it. And so when the teacher said, well, I'm going to take up, if you want to enter the contest, I'm going to take up your paper. And so I wrote my paper while she was taking up the papers, and then I won for the whole school.
You wrote it just right there on the spot.
And crazy. So I thought, you know, maybe I've got some ability, you know, with words. I don't know.
Maybe there's a talent there.
Yeah. So, but then, you know, as I grew older, I realized, you know, I don't have any connections. I don't know how you do this as a job. And so I just kind of forgot about it, really. And after about 10 years in my other career being a youth pastor, I realized, you know, I've got three kids at home. I'm having to do things at night with other people's kids.
Right.
I want to be home more with my kids. And I'd not really chosen that career. I got offered a job in college as a youth minister, and then I just kept getting offered jobs. And so 10 years later, I wake up one day and I'm like, you know, I didn't really pick this career, you know. And so I read a book called What Color's Your Parachute?
I remember that book. I read that too. Yeah, effectively, so big time.
It was about finding your passion and then finding a way to make a living with your passion. And that really resonated with me. And I thought, well, if I could have done anything, I would have been a songwriter. Mm-hmm. And so let me see if I can figure this out. So I started trying to figure it out. And there was one guy that was buying computers from my dad. My dad built PCs for people.
Okay.
And there's a guy named Gordon Payne that was buying computers from him. And Gordon was in the Crickets.
Crickets, right. Buddy Holly.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. So he had taken Buddy Holly's place when Buddy Holly died in the Crickets. And he wrote for Reba McEntire's company. So I got my courage up one day, and I saw him at my dad's. And I just said, hey, I've written some songs. Would you mind listening to them? And there was one of them that he really liked the idea, and but he said I had jacked it all up. So he, you know, he said, "Can I come in on it, and, you know, and help you make it more commercial?" So we co-wrote it together, and then
that's great.
He took me to the studio, and so we go in the studio and we play the cassette of our work tape, and then all the musicians get up and leave, and I said, "Well, where are they going?" And he said, "Well, they're going to go play our song." And I said, "Well, they just heard it one time."
Yeah,
and so when I saw that happen and they go play our song almost flawlessly the first time, I'm like, oh man, I'm hooked. I've got to figure out how to make this work. So I tried to become Gordon's new best friend, and it turns out he could not write with me every day. So he started connecting me with other people that were kind of at my level. And there was one guy, Terry Vonderhyde, that we really hit it off and we wrote well together. And Terry wound up getting a deal with Kim Williams and Sony. And
Kim Williams, legend.
Then after a while, Kim is
talked about him
amazing.
Quite a bit on the show.
But after we'd written 10 or 20 songs, Kim was like, you know, hey, I should sign you as well, you know, because I like what you guys are doing. And so he signed me, and I wrote for him for about 3.5 years until he retired. And then I went on to some other deals after that.
Wow. That's awesome. Kim Williams, if you don't know, please Google him and look him up. A big songwriter. And we've talked to him in the past about him and some of the great songs he's written. So that's really cool. That was your first publishing deal, huh? First pub deal. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a big box where we would recycle cassette tapes for work tapes. Right. And one day I went and got a cassette out of there and it said, "Ain't Going Down." And I'm like, let me pop that in and play it. And it was their original work tape of Ain't Going Down Till the Sun Comes Up. And I think it's in the Hall of Fame now.
Oh, the cassette
I took it into Kim. I was like, you might not want to erase this one. You know, you might want to keep this one. Yeah.
Oh, and he's written Papa Love Mama, right? Three Wooden Crosses. So
yeah.
Just a great guy. I heard he was just not only a hard worker, but just a great person.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So he was a mentor. And I think it's real important that you talk about that, because we talk a lot about networking. Somebody on the podcast once said network is your net worth, you know. And so you just didn't start all by yourself. You found a mentor. And did that have a lot to do with you guys starting Songtown? Because you are a great mentor, you and Clay together with Songtown. So let's talk a little bit about Songtown, how that came about and what it's all about.
Well, Kim changed my life. You know, he taught me how to write, taught me how to be commercial, taught me how the business works.
Mm.
And, I mean, just so many things. I can't say enough about him. But that did instill in me a desire to kind of pay it forward and to help other people. You know, so many things in my life came because of him mentoring me that I thought, you know, I want to do that for other people as well. So Clay Mills, one morning, he and I were writing, and we went to get coffee before, and we were talking about a woman that we knew who had been ripped off in Nashville. She had come to town, and a publisher who I'd never heard of charged her $2,500 each for two demos and took all her publishing and signed her songs for in perpetuity forever. And we're like, why would someone come to town, pay $5,000 for two decent demos and give away all their publishing forever? And we started looking online and we realized there was really nothing that was educating people about how the business worked or how, you know, what should a demo cost? When should I give up my publishing? And so we started doing daily blogs on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And after 2 years, we had done 700 something blogs. And people said, you know, you guys should teach a class. So we started teaching Zoom classes way before Zoom was cool.
Yeah.
And
so this was BC before COVID and got your start.
Okay. So we, it just kind of morphed. And after we were doing these classes, we thought, well, let's create a website where people can have community and, you know, have forums to talk about songwriting where they can come learn. So now we've got about, I think, 800 hours of video lessons on there. We've got all those blogs that we wrote.
Those are so cool. Yeah.
And we've got, you know, you can get pro feedback on your songs. You can get peer-to-peer feedback. And we just have an amazing community of people from all over the world.
Let's really talk about how it works now. I want folks to know and explore this. Songtown is really a great organization, and it's maybe a good place for you to start if you're interested in songwriting. So how does it all? Just go to the website and then what?
Yeah, it's a subscription website, so you can join by the month or by the year. We have another package that includes all of our classes, so we have about five what we call crash courses every year. So some people, that if they want to take all those, they just get the bigger membership. But essentially, once you're a member, you get one pro feedback per month, and then you can get unlimited peer-to-peer feedback. You can attend all our live events. We have probably two or three live events a week.
Oh, that's great.
And then all that video course stuff. So we have some courses that are kind of just go at your own pace and you watch the video course and do it. And then we have others that are kind of individual lessons on different topics.
What about the live ones? What happens there?
Well, we have, so I did one yesterday on poetic versus conversational lyrics. So we broke down a bunch of different lyrics that were more poetic and some that were more conversational, talked about the differences there. We've got, I don't know if you know Paul Overstreet.
Well, I've certainly heard of Paul. Yeah. I've never met him, Paul Overstreet.
So his son, Nash, was in Hot Shell Ray, the rock band.
Okay.
So he does pop live lessons for us. So he'll talk about the difference in pop music and country music, or, you know, how they wrote one of their hit pop songs and that kind of stuff and breaks it down. And then we have...
That's cool.
So we have them on all kinds of different topics. And then we also, for people who want to do it more seriously than just a hobby, we have groups that meet with a publisher once a month and get feedback. And the publishers can pitch their songs and all that kind of stuff.
That's really great. So, and the just Google it, folks, Songtown, become a member. One thing that really impressed me is it seems like a tight group of people. And a lot of times when you're songwriters, finding your own tribe, we talk about finding your own people that you hang with. And sometimes you just do a lot of co-writing and like you say, it doesn't always, sometimes you just, it doesn't work, but you find your right tribe, the people where it is writing, and you're writing good songs consistently. And it seems that you've got that there at a chance for people to find that. I remember I was running a small writers round here, not too far from where I live. And you must have had a live event or something. There were people coming in from all over the country. And I had booked a couple of them. And that night, we were full of Songtown people. Mm-hmm. And it was just great. Everybody was coming to, you know, support Songtown people. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah, we have our birthday bash in October every year. And we have people from all over the world come in. And
must have been the birthday bash.
Yeah.
So how many years strong now?
This is our 10th year of the website.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Been 12 years since we started writing the blogs and all that.
Now. Wow. Well, congratulations. How did you and Clay, did you and Clay always write together? Or?
Our publishers were best friends at one point. So at one point in our career, they just connected us. And Clay's a really strong melody guy, music guy, and I'm much more of a lyricist. So, yeah.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. And you talked about the difference between conversational and poetic lyrics. And didn't you write a whole book on that? Was that part of the book you're writing?
That's in it. Some of that's in there.
Some of that's in there. And I think it's so important today as a songwriter to ask yourself, man, is that how you would really say that? Mm-hmm. And so many times in a writing session, I'll say that. I'll go, hey, I don't think you'd really say it that way.
Yeah.
So conversational is really important, is it?
It is. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times if I'm writing, especially like a love song or a one-to-one kind of song, I'll think, you know, if I said this to my wife, is she going to go, have you been drinking? Or, you know, or is she going to be moved by it, you know? And so we can get so poetic sometimes it's not believable.
Let me ask you this, Marty. What do you think the hardest songs? I have a hard time writing love songs. Does it come easy for you? Or are those the hardest?
Yeah, those are the easiest ones for me. Yeah.
Are they really?
Yeah, most of my big hits have been love songs.
Really? Well, you know, there's one in particular that I like to play that I've played a million times on the radio. Your first really big hit was a Rascal Flatts. Kind of a love song, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got to hear the story behind it, and I'll play it, okay?
Well, I had written a song about my grandmother called She Stopped Living the Day He Died. Because my grandfather died early, and my grandmother was pretty miserable the rest of her life.
Both of my grandmothers the same way.
And so I wrote the song, played it for my family. They all cried, you know. And I played it for Kim Williams, and he said, that's the saddest crap I've ever heard. And he said, nobody's going to sing that. And
there's a guy known for killing people in his songs. I mean,
exactly.
How many in Three Wooden Crosses?
Exactly.
But anyway, go ahead.
But he said to me, he said, there is a universal truth behind that song. Mm-hmm. And if you can find what the universal truth is in that song, I'll help you write a song that's more commercial with it.
Mm.
And so I came back to him. I went home and I thought about it, and I came back and I said, well, I think the universal truth is that sometimes when we lose someone, it feels like we died.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, okay, that's right. So now work on some ideas about that. And let's not kill somebody off necessarily. Let's leave it vague where it could be.
Either way.
They just left you or they could be they died.
Sometimes it's good to leave it up to the listener. Isn't it?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I came up with the idea, While You Loved Me. And I went to him. He loved it. So he and I wrote that with Danny Wells, and that was my first top 10.
Love Danny. He's been on the show, too. Great guy. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's listen to it. This is Rascal Flatts and While You Love Me, written by Marty Dotson. We're co-written by our guest today, Marty Dotson, on the Songwriter Connection podcast.
If I ever write the story of my life, don't be surprised. You're where it begins. Girl, I'd have to dedicate every line on every page to the memories we made. Oh, while you love me. chapter one. Love innocent and young as the morning sun on a new day. Even though I know the end, will I do it all again? 'Cause I've got a lifetime in.
So many lessons in the song there. Rascal Flatts and While You Loved Me. On the Songwriter Connection podcast, song was co-written with our guest today, Marty Dotson and Kim Williams and Danny Wells, who's also been on the show. Danny was talking about how you'd go to Eastern Tennessee up into the Smokies at his cabin to write and how cool that was.
Oh, yeah. Kim, usually we would write on a Friday, and so we would drive up there and get there at 11, 12 o'clock at night, and yeah. Kim would meet us at the door and go, "Boys, I'm about to write all over myself." And he would want to write all night long. So we would often write till like 4 in the morning, and then we'd, you know, go crash and then get back up whenever we got up, and he'd be ready to write again. He was
coffee and a hook.
Beast, yeah.
Yeah, he was a beast, huh? Yeah. Fantastic. So you said you were 5 songs written that weekend, and that one became the hit.
Yeah, we demoed 5 songs we wrote that weekend, and we all predicted which one we thought would get cut first or be the hit, and none of us predicted this one.
Really?
It was the only one that got cut out of the whole session.
Are the other ones still lying around somewhere?
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. Wow. Very good. So, lessons behind that song. You know, there's a few chord changes, but there's one that's totally unexpected. Steve Dean, who's been on the show before, taught me the term money chord, uh-huh. And that's what he called it. And so I stick with that too. Sometimes it's not just your normal 1, 4, 5, 6 minor, if you know the Nashville number system, if you don't look it up. Sometimes there's a flat 7 or something that just changes the direction. You make sure that fits the prosody of what you're trying to do, mm-hmm. But you do it in that song. Mm-hmm. And then modulations, and you tell me there are 2 modulations in that song?
Yeah, I think they're modulated
taking it
twice.
Up a step.
Yeah.
Taking it up a step. Demo singer wasn't very happy about that. Right?
No, he struggled. That chord is a 4 minor.
Is it a 4 minor?
That's why it sounds so weird, because usually you'd hear the 4 major.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Very cool. So think about things like that. But of course, the voice like Gary LaVox, I mean, he could hit those 2 modulations, and he just kills it at the end. So
yeah.
Just a great song. Now, when you were writing that, did you have an artist in mind, or just, no, you're just writing the best song?
No, we were just trying to write a great song. Yeah. And we didn't even know about Rascal Flatts. They had not come out at the time.
Broke so out yet, hadn't they?
When they told us that, you know, hey, we got this new group called Rascal Flatts, they're going to cut this song, and we're like, Rascal, who, what?
No. Now, I was working in radio about that time when they first told me, Rascal, what? What is it? It's like a boy band or what?
I know.
Yeah.
So, but when they played it for us, we were like, oh my goodness, this guy can sing, you know?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. incredible. So congratulations on that. And then the door started opening for you, right? Things started happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't, you know, I think I had the impression that once you get that first top 10, you know, that it's, it'll be easy after that. And it was not.
It was not.
You know, it was several years later that Must Be Doing Something Right came out.
Well, let's talk about that one because I used to do the show on TV in Cincinnati. We called it Nashville Songwriter Connection. And today it's, you know, it's a radio version. But one of my guests there was Jason Matthews, Patrick Matthews, who you co-wrote that with.
Yeah.
And it's got one of the greatest lines in country music history. Deep Blue Needs You Eyes. Come on. Was that you?
It was, but I'll tell you this. I threw that line out and immediately tried to retract it. And I said, oh my gosh, that's too cheesy, isn't it? And Jason was like, no, I love it. I think it's great, you know. So it probably left to my own devices. I would have taken that line out of the song.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I remember Kent Blasey talking about the dress dropping to the floor song, and how he was afraid to throw that out too. And then the rest of them go, nah, that'll never work. But it worked. Mm-hmm. You know, the black dress song I'm talking about. Hey. So yeah, Deep Blue Needs You Eyes. Sometimes it's just something like that. You know, and that became the thing that everybody, I remember getting calls like, will you play that Deep Blue Need You Eyes song?
Oh, really?
Right. So
that's funny.
It's interesting. Yeah. So well, it's really cool. Should we play a little bit of that? Let's play that one. Let me play. I got that right here. Must Be Doing Something Right. Billy Currington was the artist. And it was you and Jason Patrick Matthews. I ran into you not too long ago at the local. I want to get him back on this show.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
A woman is a mystery. A man just can't understand. Sometimes all it takes to please her is a touch of your hand. And other times you gotta take it slow and hold her all night long. Heaven knows there's so many ways a man can go wrong. Must be doing something right. Heard you sigh, you leaned into my kiss and close. Those deep blue need you eyes. Don't know what I did to earn a love like this, but baby, I must be doing something right. Show me the way. I'm open to suggestions. Whatever you say. Tonight's about giving you what you want, whatever it takes. Be doing something right. I just heard you sigh. You leaned into my kiss and close. Those deep blue need you eyes. Don't know what I did to earn a love like this, but baby, I must be doing something. Thank you.
It's such a great song, and there's some really cool stories about it that we're going to share with Marty Dotson, our guest on the Songwriter Connection podcast. Brief break. We'll be right back.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close.
Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Songwriter Connection with Dave Linehan. Find us on Facebook and YouTube at The Songwriter Connection Podcast. And find Dave at thedaveconnection.com. Now back to the show with your host, Dave Linehan.
I don't know where I first heard it, but they were talking about the timing of a song, and they said, well, that song's right in the money. It's like 305, 310. That's right in the money. That's in the money. This song that we just played, doing something right, it's like 429. And you said that was a concern, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Length of a song.
Yeah, we were worried that would be too long for them to play on radio.
Yeah, but when it's that good, you know. So tell me about the songwriting. You and Jason are writing. You're working on a song.
Yeah, we had been writing another song idea for 2 days. So we'd like had one long day, and we got frustrated. We weren't finished, so we just quit. Came back to it another day, and had not made any progress at lunchtime. So we just went to lunch, and on the way back, Jason said, do you like that song we're working on? And I said, not really, but I thought you liked it. And he said, I don't like it. So we'd been working 2 days on a song nobody liked. So Jason just jokingly said, well, let's write something people can make out to. There's not really any good make out songs on the radio. So I said, well, what are you thinking? And he played that groove, and we just took off.
Right? So he had the groove in the melody, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. You just put your lyric hat on and guys went to work.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So you know where your strengths are. And we talk a little bit about this too, knowing what your strengths are as a writer. How important is that?
Oh, it's crucial. And in the beginning, I wanted to be the guy that could do it all. I wanted to be the guy that could do my own demos at home, play all the instruments, record it, you know, do my vocals. And I spent so much money and time trying to do that. And finally, Kim Williams came to me one day and he said, you know what? You're a really solid lyricist and you're a really great idea person. I want you to work on those things and quit trying to learn Pro Tools and trying to get better at guitar and learn piano and all those other things. And he said, or you're not going to have a deal much longer.
Wow.
And he was like, I think you could really be successful if you just focus on what you're great at. And so at that point, I just started focusing on ideas and my lyric writing, and I gave up my dreams of doing all those other things. And Kim sat down with me and said, here are some of my favorite songs you've written. Tell me what happened in those co-writes. And
I said,
well, you know, and these, a lot of them were with Mark Nestler, who's a great writer. And I said, well, when I write with Mark, I don't even take my guitar out of the case. You know, Mark just plays guitar. He's such a great singer and melody person. And as he asked me about every song, I realized in every scenario, I was not the person playing the guitar.
Wow.
And I realized I was limiting myself by what I could play. You know, I was limited to what I could play. And so, now I joke that I have snacks in my guitar case because often the guitar never comes out, you know. But I think for every person, you know, there's very few of us that can be world-class at everything.
Right.
And so finding the thing that we can be world-class at and then finding people who are already world-class at the other things, to me, is the secret to success.
Wow. That's so important. Back that up and let's do it again, folks. That is it. That's nailing it. I mean, you're really focusing in on your strengths, what you do best. What do you do best? You know, sometimes I feel like I gotta do the drive and pick up the guitar and find the... But there are days like that where I'll just go, yeah, you know, you got it. I want to write to that, you know. So find out what it is for you. The other thing we talk about a lot of this is genre. And I always tell folks, don't worry about that. You know, if you do, then define your own. And what, again, be clear cut. What is your genre? You know, I'm just going to give you some examples. You've heard it. If you listen to the show a lot, you've heard me say, Mark Allen Burnett, in your face, country soul. That's what I am. Jess Kelly Adams, Grit with Grace Country, and Olivia Francis, Sunshine Story Pop. There's on and on. Jamie Harris is folk and roll. What is your genre? Okay. All right. So you know what your strengths are. But the other thing is, regardless of genre, write the best song, right? With whoever's in the room. And you are a perfect example of this with cuts from, you had a number one K-pop song. Mm-hmm. And I'm really interested to hear this story. This song knocked Psy off of number one and became the Asian song of the year, right?
Right.
Tell me about that. And we'll play a little bit of that. And tell me how that all comes about. Here's a guy who's got cuts from Rascal Flatts and Kenny Chesney, and he's got the K-pop number one. That's got to be strange.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many things in my career I didn't plan for. They just happened, you know, and the way Kim Williams would always put it was, you know, he said, good things happen when you keep your butt in the chair.
Mm.
And he said, you know, if you just keep showing up and doing the work, then things will happen that you never imagined, you know. And so,
so true.
That particular song, I had gone to Sweden for a songwriting camp, and I was writing with two Swedish writer, producer, artists, and we wrote a song intending for it to be pitched to like a Bounce dryer sheet commercial. And so it was called Bounce.
Bounce, there you go.
And
that's
so
cool.
We thought it would be a commercial of some kind. And the publisher of one of those guys is real big in the K-pop, J-pop world. And so he wound up pitching it. There was an artist, Cho Young Pil, that had been, the way they described it to me was he had been the Paul McCartney in South Korea, the biggest artist, legendary, that? And his wife passed away.
Ooh.
And so he said he was never going to sing again. And 10 years later, he decided to do an album as a comeback and to tribute it to his wife. And for some reason, my song was the song that he picked for his comeback. So
wow.
It was a huge thing. It was played in every Kia that you, if you bought a Kia in South Korea, when you turned it on, it played this song, you know,
wow.
That kind of stuff. Just crazy things that you
know.
How
did that affect the worldly chicks?
Yeah.
Did it?
That helped, yeah.
That helped. Hey, let's play a little bit of it. This is really cool, man. So, hey, Korea's a country, so, you know.
Country music.
Country music. Got that bouncy feel to it, too. We talk about prosody. It's that bounce. 그대가 돌아서면 두 눈이 마주칠까. Now, you wrote this in English, right? That's cool. I knew eventually you'd get to English. I dig it. Listen to that. It should be a bounce commercial. They're missing out on this.
I know, they are.
They really are. Cool song, man.
Thank you.
Let's talk about some other ones. Plain White Tees. They already did this song I loved called Delilah. Mm-hmm. And you had a cut with them, too. Huh? Tell me about that one.
Well, so I was playing a show at the Bluebird, and this guy came up to me after the show and said, hey, I really like your lyrics. Would you be interested in writing? And he told me his name. And once he told me his name, I'm like, oh, that's the lead singer for the Plain White Tees, you know?
Yeah.
And so we wound up writing. I think we wrote two songs the first night, and they cut them both. There's one called Killer, and then
Killer,
one called
right.
Cirque dans la Rue.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the fun things about being a lyricist is that I can just get out of the way of melody. So, like, mm-hmm. on Cirque dans la Rue, it's crazy, and it's I just followed what he wanted to do. I just, you know, he told me, you know, I want to do this here. I want to do this Carnival Barker kind of thing. And so I could just put lyrics in it and let him do that. Same kind of thing with Bounce, you know, or other pop songs. It's just I can transfer my skills over if somebody else is doing the music.
That's awesome. Well, let's play a little bit of Killer. I got Killer right here, ready to go. Let's, you know, get an idea of what this is all about.
If I was a pirate sailing the seas, would you come and pillage the village with me? We'll bury the treasure, go down together. If I was a pirate, if I was an outlaw robbing a bank, would you be my Bonnie, help me get away? Would you pull the trigger and blow them away? If I was an outlaw, how bad would I have to be? If I was a vampire roaming the night, would you be?
I always hate to cut songs short, you know, as the radio does, but there's just so much I want to talk to you about, so I apologize for this, you know.
That's all right.
But there's so many things. Like you say, you talked about how you're really good at ideas and coming up with the lyrics and things. And we always say, I came up through NSAI, right? And so it's all about song. It was their thing. I think if you want to go even deeper than that, it's all about the idea. Mm-hmm. The song is all about the idea, right?
Right.
So talk a little bit about ideas. Where you get them and what's it? How does it happen? You don't just pull them out of the air.
No. Early in my career, I would spend at least a day a week in the library and just reading things. I would read books of poetry. I would read books by great authors that had interesting ways to say things. Mm-hmm. And I discovered books of quotes.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, it's a quote because it's something said in an interesting way. So then when the internet became more prominent, I found, you know, like, well, there's sites that have quotes from movies. Well, there's all kinds of great ideas in there, you know, yeah, that kind of thing. So that's where I find a lot of them. These days, too, I'll go on Google and go life quotes. And,
wow.
And it pops up all these memes, you know, with different quotes about life or loss or summer or beach or whatever topic I'm wanting to find titles.
Very interesting.
I realized early in my career that ideas were my golden ticket to get into. I could get into rights that I didn't deserve to be in, really,
because you had a strong idea.
If I had a great idea. So Tom Shapiro was a guy that I wanted to write with. Tom,
big time.
You know, he'd had 50 top 10 hits. I'd had zero at that point.
Mm.
But I wrote with a guy that was in his office building, so I would see him at the coffee machine, and we kind of got to know each other and just would talk, you know, when we were in the kitchen. And I overheard him say one day that the hardest thing about being a hit songwriter is having a hit idea every day.
Mm.
And I thought,
I agree.
Okay,
I agree.
If I can provide that, maybe I can be valuable, you know. And so I went and I worked on ideas until I found one. And I would go to ASCAP and BMI and search their database to see how common that title was. And I found one
that
I thought was great. And, and it had like 1,000 songs already. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I finally found one that there were no songs with that title mm-hmm. in the world. And
yeah.
So I went to Tom and I go, hey, I got this idea. I think it's cool. Would you be interested in writing it with me? And he said, well, tell me about it. And I told him, and he was like, okay, let's write that.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, he wouldn't schedule me on his calendar to write, but every time I called him with an idea, he trusted that it was going to be great.
Wow.
And so I would just wait and make sure, you know, I had some real power behind what I was bringing him, you know. And then it got to where, like, that first one got cut by Diamond Rio, and so then I could start getting on his calendar every now and then, that kind of thing. But I often have used those ideas to get into a co-write that I want to, you know, with somebody I want to write.
That is really cool. Another great lesson in songwriting right there. Really. Wow. Ideas. Just going to start with an idea. I like the fact that you spend time in your week just scheduling time to come up with ideas. I don't do that. Do you do that at home? Do you song when you think about it? I'm going to start adopting that. I just learned that. I probably, I just got a free Songtown lesson. This is what I love about doing this podcast. I get to pick the brains of some hit writers, and I find out new things. And I hope you do too at home.
It's part of my ritual, actually. When I'm getting ready to write, mm-hmm. pretty much every day, I will, go for a walk, get my exercise in. I'll make a cup of coffee, and then I'll sit down at the computer 20 or 30 minutes before I'm going to write, and I'll just look for ideas.
It's great.
And I've got a database where I keep them all organized. So if an artist comes in, they say, I want a song about my dad.
Yeah.
I can search for dad, and I've got all these ideas that I've tagged for dad. Or if I'm writing with Paul Overstreet, I can search for ideas I've saved for Paul Overstreet and that kind of thing. So I keep them really organized, but it's just something I try to do as a discipline, really, just because so many days I've not been feeling inspired, mm-hmm. and I find an idea that excites me, and all of a sudden I'm inspired, and I go into my co-write, and I go, hey, I got this idea I just found, you know, and it just brings a lot of energy into the room.
Yeah. I was talking to Bill O'Hanley, who's a mutual friend, and Bill was telling me one time he was with a big writer, and he had like 10 ideas. Like, yeah, I wrote that one. We wrote that one already. I wrote that. I wrote this one. We wrote that one, too. Finally got an idea that they didn't. Nah. I don't let that intimidate me anymore. I think if they've got a good groove going and they got a melody and they've got a different way to write it, I always say, well, we're going to have to write it better. Well, you know, that's a tall thing sometimes. Yeah. But I can remember songs like that. Yeah, that one's been done before. Well, how do we do it different? How do we approach it different? So that's the next place I wanted to go with you. Where to put the camera. So you got this idea and you throw it out. We're going to write it. What's the first thing you start? Are you looking for different angles, looking for different twists?
Yeah, back to, I've got a whole course on Songtown called What's Your Angle? That's about that. But my process is there's kind of a series of questions that I ask myself of like, the first one is in what circumstance would you really say this in real life?
Ah.
Because I want it to sound real and authentic. But then, you know, so I'll say, well, maybe I'd say it to my child in this circumstance, or maybe I would say it to my wife in this circumstance. And I go through all the different possibilities of where I might say it. And then I go, okay, which of those are more universal? Like, mm-hmm. you know, and then I kind of whittle it down like, okay, these are the more universal angles. And then I go, you know, which of these would appeal to women most? Uh-huh. Because women are the biggest listeners of country music.
Yeah.
So I'm asking myself these questions to kind of get to, okay, let's find something that's real, but it's also very universal.
Mm. Let's take an example. Everybody wants to go to heaven. Nobody wants to go right now.
Exactly.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
So that was that your idea? And mm-hmm. tell us about that whole process. And
well, I walked in that day with Jim Collins, and Jim said, let's write a reggae song today and pitch it to Kenny Chesney. And so I searched in my database. I knew I had something, and I had one idea, and it was that one under reggae. So my database got me a number one song for that particular day. But so I threw out that idea. Jim loved it. We wrote it pretty quickly. And then
did you really?
Later we came back. Before we demoed it, Jim said, you know, I think we need to have a little bridge that makes sure that the singer's not being sacrilegious, or he's not being just joking about this. He really does want to go to heaven. Mm-hmm. So we wrote that bridge that kind of made sure we nailed that down.
Let's play it. You'll listen to the bridge, and you'll see what we're talking about here. I'm sure you've heard this song. Maybe you're listening to it in a different way now. Kenny Chesney, song co-written by our guest, Marty Dodson, on a podcast.
Preacher told me last Sunday morning, son, you better start living right. You need to quit the women and whiskey and carrying on all night. Don't you want to hear them call your name? Standing at the pearly gates, I told the preacher, yes I do, but I hope they don't call today. I ain't ready. and preacher, maybe you didn't see me throw an extra 20 in the plate. It's one for everything I did last night and one to get me through today. Here's a 10 to help you remember next time you got the good Lord's ear. Say I'm coming, but there ain't no hurry. I'm having fun down here. Don't you know that everybody wants to go to heaven, get their wings and fly around? Everybody want to go to heaven, but nobody want to go now. Someday I want to see those streets of gold, getting my halo. But I wouldn't mind waiting at least 100 years or so. The other place, there ain't no doubt. Everybody wanna go to heaven, but nobody wanna go now. Everybody wanna go to heaven. Hallelujah, let me hear you shout. Everybody wanna go to heaven, but nobody wanna go now. Thank God to speak for the crowd.
Well, now that we heard the bridge, I'm gonna go away from it again because there's so many things I want to talk about. But yeah, what a brilliant bridge. I mean, and it ties it all together, and it doesn't make him sound like a heathen, right?
Yeah.
The very first line of that song grabs you right in. And so my next question is, how important is that first line in a song that you're writing?
You know, that's funny. When I teach talking about first lines, I use that song as an example because I feel like we did everything you're supposed to do in that first line because...
Yeah.
I talk about the first verse should introduce characters, context, and setting. So preacher told me last Sunday morning, son, you better start living right. So the setting is singer's been misbehaving. Context is he's been misbehaving. Setting, we didn't have to say he's at church because that's where you find the preacher on Sunday morning.
Exactly.
It's the characters are him and the preacher.
Wow. So. Very cool. The other thing, too, in that song, again, lessons behind the song, I love how the last line in the verse leads right. And I think everything should lead to the hook. I mean, really, it's my philosophy. But when that last line just naturally takes you, like it's the next thought. I mean, so do you spend a lot of time? Does that lead me right to the chorus, that song? That line? Does that line lead me right to my chorus?
Yeah, I think maybe Jim added that in the studio just as an ad lib, almost.
Really?
Yeah,
just no kind of
because he sang it the demo, and I'm thinking that he said that in the studio. Yeah,
so kind of an accident. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And again, modulation that song after the bridge, it takes it up a step or a half step, and it takes you to a different place. Mm-hmm. So it's cool. It's good writing. See, I love tearing them apart like this, getting under the hood,
breaking them down.
You're doing some really cool things right now. I want to talk a little bit about that. There's another Marty Dotson. You know, I was talking about running this little writer's round, and I thought we had Marty Dotson, playing one night, but we didn't. We had her.
Yeah.
So, and there's no relation.
No relation at all. It's really strange. She reached out to me on Facebook years ago and said, hey, I think we're name twins. We should write sometime. And I didn't know who she was. And
she's very talented.
I researched it, found out she was lead singer for Saving Jane.
Wow.
And super talented. We became like really fast friends, but we live about a mile apart. Our birthdays are 3 days apart.
Oh, my God.
It's crazy, all the similarities. So people think we're married or I'm her dad or something, you know.
Yeah. It was meant to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But during COVID, we decided to do, I always loved John Prine and Iris DeMent's song, In Spite of Ourselves.
In Spite of Ourselves, great song.
So I approached Marty and a producer friend of ours, Charlie Chamberlain, and said, what if we wrote an EP of all songs like that, like it's an older couple arguing in song?
What a concept.
And so we did that. We wrote it all by Zoom, produced it all by Zoom. And we've released two songs now. The band is called Common Law.
So we
made up this fictional couple. We used AI to create the art for it, so that people on the cover are AI people.
Oh, are they?
So yeah,
check it out. Uh-huh. It is really. Were you guys listening to my wife and I, our conversations and arguments? Uh-huh. Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, we just get Siri to spy on you, and then we get transcripts.
What a great idea! Let's play a little bit for better or worse from the Common Law Band. It's you and the other Marty.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go. it does have that chopped right. I just admit.
When we told that preacher Richard Poor, you swore that we'd be richer.
Well, that's back when you still looked like the bride in all them pictures.
When I said in sickness, I never meant I'd be your mama when you get a cold.
When I said in health, I wasn't thinking mental, but, well, there you go.
For better or worse, we said it and we meant it. Sometimes love hurts to remind you that you're in it. Oh, I guess the ties that bind can be a blessing and a curse. Till death and we got bets on who goes first. For better or worse.
Forsaking others includes every flirty diner or waitress.
I thought saying I do meant a little more doing like our honeymoon in Vegas.
At least I've got a lot more now of you to have and hold.
Baby, all I'll say is you're worth your weight in gold.
For better or worse, we said it and we meant it. Sometimes love hurts to remind you that you're in it. Oh, I guess the ties that bind can be a blessing and a curse. Till death and we got bets on who goes first. For better or worse.
Got bets on who goes first. Love it. Line before the hook is so important, isn't it? Uh-huh. And that just sets it up perfect.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. You know, it's more of an Americana sound for you. Mm-hmm. So is that a little departure from what you're, or is it right where you want to be these days?
Well, you know, I've actually, in addition to my six other number ones, I've had four bluegrass number ones. So I really enjoy writing bluegrass and Americana kind of stuff. Me so too. This has been an outlet for that a little bit, you know.
It's so cool. So is it climbing up the Americana charts these days?
No, it's not.
Is it out there? We just got to get it out there.
Yeah.
Get over to the Roots Radio, WMOT, which I listen to all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to.
Yeah. The other thing before I let you go, and I want to get this from a songwriter who considers his strength, lyrics and ideas. Rhyme. Perfect rhyme, near rhyme. First guy I wrote in this in town, he was, I want perfect rhymes. Gotta be perfect, perfect, perfect. And I was always like, no, because I hate when I'm watching around and I'm hearing a song, usually it comes from new writers, where you can predict what that rhyme is going to be.
Yeah, I do too.
Uh-huh. So, what's your philosophy on that?
If you can say something natural with a perfect rhyme,
mm-hmm.
I often do that because I think it does feel really good
mm-hmm.
to have that perfect rhyme, but I'm never going to compromise what I need to say for a rhyme.
Oh, that's so good.
So so most of my songs don't have all perfect rhymes. Mm-hmm. There's maybe a few that do, but I try to default to what do I need to say here
mm-hmm.
and make sure that's right. And if I need to, I change the rhyme, you know, so that I can say what I need to say. So, but I don't ever let rhyme dictate what I'm going to have to say.
Yeah. How many times in a song have you heard and it just sounds forced?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a rhyming June and moon. Okay. You know, or perfume and whatever,
yeah.
You know, and you force it in there because it rhymes. Ask yourself that as you're writing, you know, are you forcing it or are you saying what you really want to say?
I think a great example too is Red Solo Cup by Toby Keith. It's like, just got so many quirky words.
I just saw the Warren Brothers at the Blue Bird. They were talking about that. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But, you know, the quirky words are what make that interesting.
Yeah, they really are.
And they're not perfect rhymes, all of them. But
proceed to party? Yeah. I mean, would you put that in a country song normally? But it fits perfect.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just great. Marty, I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to meet you and talk to you in depth and get under the hood of some of these great songs.
Likewise.
And I wish you more success, not only in songwriting, but with Songtown. And more books and stuff, okay? Do it all.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you very much. Marty Dotson.
We hope you enjoyed this intimate glimpse into the world of songwriting and found inspiration in the stories shared by our talented guests. Remember, the magic of music lies not only in the notes and chords, but in the emotions and experiences woven into every lyric. Until next time, keep listening. keep creating, and keep the melodies alive.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.